Listen to shoot the defence. It's unbelievable, Jeff.
Hello and welcome to Shoot the Defence on FNX, brought to you by The Life of Eight. Now visit thelifeofeight.com for all your lifestyle and sportswear needs. I'm your host, Stel, and I have three co-hosts with me this evening. First of all, Mr. Yannick is Jay. He's actually sat next to me in the flesh.
You're not
in front of the cooker. You're not in front of a doll's house. You're not in front of Barack Obama. How are you doing?
Not bad. You all right?
Yeah, I'm good.
Nice to see you.
You too. You've had a shave. You've had a haircut.
Yep.
You're not grieving the loss of Arsene Wenger's Arsenal career.
No, you're not.
My second co-host is, as ever, Rod Riggs. How you doing, Rod?
Yeah, I'm good, mate. Thanks. Yourself?
Yeah, all good, mate. All good. Are you feeling energised this evening?
Yeah, very energised.
You sound it.
He had his pie.
He's had his pie and his chips. Great stuff. Right, our very special guest tonight is none other than Editor-in-Chief of Football Fancast. It is James Jones. James, welcome to Shoot the Defence, mate. How you doing?
Very good, thanks. Thanks for having me on, guys.
Yeah, it's an absolute pleasure. Absolute pleasure. James, before we start the show, you know what? We don't really need like kind of an introduction because they know your show more than our show. But tell our listeners, those that don't know anything about Football Fancast, tell us a bit about it.
Yeah, so Football Fancast recently has gone a bit of a rebranding. We've gone from your normal transfer clickbait sort of website into more of an opinionated website. Sometimes trying to break the barriers of opinion, football opinion, trying to give people something a little bit different to think about on some of the big stories. Launching a lot of video content at the moment, a lot of infographics, a lot of statistical stuff. But it's the place to really go to if you want a different look at your transfer stories, as well as any other big talking points in Premier League football.
Fantastic. And this is for all clubs around the UK, is that right?
Predominantly Premier League and Championship. And obviously we'll be covering the World Cup this summer, and we do a lot of Champions League stuff as well.
Superb, there you go. Wonderful. See what kind of guests we get on?
Absolutely.
People that know what they're talking about, unlike you.
I was going to say, why am I here?
Right, now, before we go into our Premier League review, as you may or may not know from our Twitter, we've been speaking to the guys from the new football fan app called PitchDMM. Now, I'm pleased to say that we'll actually be able to do on a weekly basis over the summer and next season is share some stats with you from the app live on air, those of you that are actually watching. Now, in order to make this work, we actually need every one of our listeners to download it. It can be done through the app or the app store, should I say, the Play Store. And what I really want to do is actually bring a voice for our fans. Now, something we can use to get our voices heard, which is quite...
Everybody can hear your voice.
Yeah, they can hear my voice from here to wherever. Now, there's a great new feature called Fan Time, and all you have to do is hit play and record your response to the question on the dashboard. And I believe Perry Groves is actually on there at the moment, which is fantastic. Now, remember to get your predictions on the PitchDMM app for your next game and be heard as a fan. See that? That's a great little introduction to the app.
Absolutely.
I'm boring everyone. So let's talk about the football. And we begin with champions Man City, who finished the season with 100 points after beating Southampton 1-0. The defeat didn't have any effect on the Saints' Premier League future, as already relegated Stoke turned over Swansea 2-1. Now, the Swansea needed to beat Stoke and hope City smashed Southampton by 10 goals. But even the greatest football gods out there couldn't help Swansea. Now, incidentally, Leon Britton made his farewell appearance as the former West Ham midfielder and Arsenal, shall I say, announced his retirement. Britton played in all four divisions for Swansea, making 536 appearances. Now, James, we can add Leon Britton to the list of players who should have played for England, can't we? I mean, I think he was extremely underrated, don't you think?
I think he's underrated. I think, like a lot of players, English players in the Premier League era, he came through a time when there was a lot of competition for that role at England, wasn't he? He had like, at his peaks, he had to compete with the likes of Gerrard, Lampard for that midfield role. You know, at the end of the day, I mean, he didn't play many years in the Premier League. I think it's four seasons in the Premier League, like sort of playing most games, like at his peak. And I think that probably counted against him. I think, as you said, he played in every division for Swansea. But when he got to that Premier League level, it was getting to the point where, you know, there was a lot of competition. He wasn't at the forefront of the Premier League. And I've always said that a lot of getting picked for England depends on who you play for. And that's no disrespect to Swansea. But had you been playing for maybe a top six club, you probably would have got one or two caps, I would have thought. But interestingly, he didn't actually represent England above under 16 level either. So I'd say he probably did deserve a call up, but you know, he still did pretty well to make over 500 appearances for Swansea.
It's an incredible amount of games, especially in the modern day. Mm. What do you make of Leon Britton?
Average player, to be honest.
Really?
Yeah, I think so. I'm just a steady midfield player. Just passed it left, right. Hardly gave it away. It was like a David Batty, you know, for me.
Oh, come on. You can't. That's harsh. Rod, come on, man. Save me.
Yeah, he's a good player. He's one of them players that every team needs. You know, a bit of glue that keeps things going and keeps things together in that position. Very rarely gives the ball away. Yeah, decent player. Like James said, England have been rich with fantastic centre midfielders in his period, so it's obviously going to be difficult for him. I.e. Gerrard, Lampard, you know, even Carrick only got 20, how many caps, and he should have got much more caps. So it was a tough position, but yeah, he was a decent player.
If it was that good, he would have played for bigger clubs. Somebody would have taken, one of the big boys would have taken a chance. For me, you know.
I'm not saying he's a top six player.
He was a decent player. He hardly gave the ball away. He was good on the ball, but it was a small guy as well. So maybe his physique went against him. But just a steady player for me.
So that's why you were just a Sunday League player, because of your size?
I was a good Sunday League
player. The way Jan's talking, he must play like Ronaldo.
No, I was better than him, Rod, to be fair, but you know, yeah, we'll talk about that later.
Yeah, I mean,
you saw me scoring a cup final, by the way.
Don't get me started, right? Gents, now which of the three teams I've gone down do you think actually better prepared to put up a fight next season and get promoted at the first time of asking? We've seen the likes of Aston Villa and Middlesbrough really struggling. I mean, they're playing tonight in the playoffs. Rod, which of the three do you think have got best chance coming up?
Oh, that's a difficult question, that, because you know, all three of them have been in this position before, and are all, you know, more or less either rebuilt and did it the slow way. You know, they're all going to be without a manager from next week. So it depends what players they keep, what players they bring in, what managers they come in. But if I was going to pick anyone, it would be probably Stonk. But it could be any three of them. It could be none of them, because they could all start rebuilding. You know, do it like a slow way, because they've all done that before. You know, West Brom back in the day, they went down, they come up, they went down, then they come up, and they stayed up, and the Stoke more or less mirrored that and did it the same way. And so Swansea in a way. But you know, are they going to start again, or are they going to keep with some of the players with on the big wages? It's a difficult question. But if I was going to pick anyone, it'd be Stoke.
Mm. James, what do you reckon, mate? Because I believe you're a West Ham fan, right?
I am, yeah.
And with the greatest respect, I mean, you've seen your team go down and come back up, but they've kept a core group of players in those promotion seasons, haven't they? So you can probably relate to these clubs best. Which of the three do you think have got the best chance of coming back up?
I think, as Roger said, it could be any of them. As we all know, the Championship is one of the hardest leagues to get out of. And all three will have their moments next season. The thing that I think about these three teams is relegation for all three of them had been on the cards for a few years now. And as we've seen from the likes of Stoke since they were relegated, what's come out from the players about what's going on behind the scenes at the football club suggests that there's going to be a rebuild job at Stoke. Which might suggest a little bit like what happened at Villa. I think they've just beaten Borough to get into the playoff final, but it's taken them 2 years to really get there, to get within a game of coming back up. So they needed to rebuild as well. And a lot of clubs have to go down there and reassess things, and that sometimes it doesn't happen overnight. So I wouldn't be surprised if all three, not so much struggle, but you know, perhaps one or two have to rely on a playoff spot. But my favourite, if I'm going to go for one for automatic, it would probably have to be Swansea, just because I think they've got probably the strongest squad out of the three.
What do you reckon?
Tough one. It depends who they keep, what manager comes in. If Darren Moore stays at West Brom and he keeps a few of their players there, I think with the team, with the spirit that he's inherited since he's been there, For me, it could be West Brom, but Stoke is an attraction, and Stoke have got a few bob as well, so maybe they'll attract better players in the Championship. So I think Stoke or West Brom out of the three, I'd say.
Probably and by Stoke. All accounts, Stoke have got some decent young players, so maybe they get rid of some of the big wages. These are decent young players. Have a look at them in pre-season and see if they're good enough for the Championship.
He's right. And the thing is, all three teams have got fantastic academies. We've seen Stoke.
And Swansea is really good as well.
Exactly, and West Brom. So, as you said, if Darren Moore gets that job full-time, I don't see why they can't get it. Obviously, there's a lot of players that have relegation release clauses from all three clubs. Mm-hmm. I can't see the likes of James Rodriguez staying there. I can't see...
Rondon won't stay there.
No, of course not.
Johnny Evans will leave. Foster, probably.
There you go. But, you've got your Chris
Bright. Swansea could say the same as well. Abraham, the big centre-forward, he's going to go back to Chelsea. They're going to lose a few of the players. So, obviously Stoke are going to lose Shaqiri and obviously some other big players. So, it's a proper rebuild job, and like James said, that league is so difficult. It's like every week, relentless, game after game. Mm. They're all difficult.
That's right.
Hardest league.
That's right. Well, James mentioned Aston Villa getting to the playoff final tonight, and this edition of Shoot Defence is dedicated to former Aston Villa and Bolton defender J. Lloyd Samuel, who unfortunately, tragically passed away this morning. Our thoughts and deepest condolences go to his family. And Rod, you messaged me within minutes of me putting out a tweet about it. Did you know him, or you knew of him? You spoke to him, or
I didn't obviously know him, but when when I see him out, he'd always been say hello and say a few words, and he was always polite, and always had a chuckle when we seen each other. But it's just such. It's heartbreaking, he dropped his kids up at school and then, half an hour late, dead. So it's 37 years of age. Such a nice lad. So many, we say this every time someone passes away, but, he was such a nice kid. And everyone who I know who knew him well has got glowing reports to say about him. It was just tragic, a young family, and he's obviously a young wife as well. It's just heartbreaking, really is.
Yeah, and the past two or three seasons we've been doing this show, we've touched on a lot of deaths. I mean, there's a Chapecoense plane crash, which is a tragedy. We had Cyril Regis just passing away out of the blue. Now this, it's just, it puts things into perspective. I don't want to, lower the tone a bit and all that, but, it's something that obviously we must discuss because, he was, as Rod said, he was a great guy. There are a lot of ex-pros on Twitter, social media, saying nice things about him. He was very active on LinkedIn. I know that for a fact. I think he had his own academy as well, if I'm not mistaken. And obviously the Trinidad and Tobago FA have put out a few messages as well. So it was a bit of a shock, wasn't it? A massive shock, should I say. Yeah. Anyway.
Sad.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Right. Let's move on, shall we? Where was I? Yeah. Okay. So Man City. Mm. They're the side known as the Centurions. 100 points. Is it fair that people have been kind of playing down their title success because they've been a bit of a failure in Europe this season?
No, I don't think it's fair. I think they've been phenomenal, to be honest. As a United fan, seeing what they've achieved and what they've done, it makes me sick, to be fair. But you can't deny the football that they've played. They've played attacking flair football all season, the goals, the points, all the records that they've broken. Mm. You've got to hand it to them. And let's face it, they played Liverpool in the Champions League. You are Liverpool and old mugs. They're in the Champions League final, and Liverpool played good attacking football as well. So that game could have gone either way. And, if you look at City's kind of season as a whole, was it three bad games, four bad games all season? The rest have been near enough perfect or spot on. And, you can compare City to your Uniteds of the past that won the treble or the Invincibles. For me, this team is the best team the Premiership has seen.
Really?
Yeah, I think
so. Wow.
The fact that they're going nearly into every game knowing that they're going to beat you 3-0, 4-0, 5-0. With Arsenal, with United, they were unbeatable, Arsenal, but they had a bit of luck during that time that they didn't lose a game.
Well, City didn't. I seem to remember they played West Ham at home and they struggled. I seem to remember
they beat them 2-1. I'm not saying results. I'm just saying the consistency of where they've lost two games all season. 4-3 to Liverpool and 3-2 to United, which was a fluke, to be fair. United just turned up second half. If you look at the season as a whole, they've trounced nearly everybody that they've played. So for me, I think they're the best side the Premiership has
seen. Better than the 99 United side that won the treble.
Well, United only turned up after Christmas, that 99 year, because they went unbeaten after that. Yeah, the United were a good side. The squad was really good. But, you know, you can argue, you know, Arsenal's, you know, Invincibles, they went unbeaten. So you can say, well, they didn't lose a game. City did. I just think as an attacking side, as the way that they've played the game, the points, the goals, the assists, everybody scored like 15, 20 goals. If you look at, you know, Sterling, Sane, Jesus, Aguero, De Bruyne, they've all scored goals. David Silva. I just think, for me, they've been the most entertaining, the most great team to watch, and the results have proved it.
High praise indeed from Jan. James, do you agree, mate?
I do. I think, I know a lot of people say, well, you know, Arsenal didn't lose a game in that Invincible season, but they didn't win as many games as Man City did this season. Didn't score as many points, didn't score as many goals. So I think Man City, although, okay, yeah, they lost a couple of games, but they still smashed every record under the sun. They smashed the record for the amount of games won in a single season, goals, points, you name it, they were breaking records. And I think for that reason alone, I think they can be called the best Premier League team we've ever seen. I know you mentioned the United team in 99, but, you know, that Man City had an opportunity to go and do a very, very similar thing, and I wouldn't put it past them to go and do a very similar thing, maybe get the treble or win the Champions League in the next couple of years. You know, they're that good, and they're only going to get better with the amount of money they've got, with Pep Guardiola in charge, and the framework and the philosophy that he's already built. I think for a Man United fan like you, I mean, you must be terrified that this could get even better in the blue side.
Saying what I did, my stomach.
I mean, if this was happening in London and it was just Tottenham and it was like between Tottenham and West Ham, I'd be livid. Because it'd be like, you know, this is so no signs of letting up. And I think Man City are going to start to dominate. And for that reason, I think they can be seen as, this team alone can be seen as the best team.
What do you think?
The thing is, when Abramovich bought Chelsea, people were saying, oh, one day, you know, he's using them as a plaything. You know, one day he's going to leave. You know, he's still there. But then when you look at other owners of clubs, it's happened before. Owners buy these teams and then they just leave afterwards. You had the guys from Iceland buying
West Ham
a few years ago.
Magnussen, wasn't
it? Yeah, that's right. The thing is with the Abu Dhabi lot, they want to leave a legacy. And for them, it's, pardon my language, it's a dick measuring contest, right? They want to have the best. They want to be the best. They will not stop spending money until they are the best. That's just how it is. If you go to the United Arab Emirates, you've got the Burj Khalifa, which is the biggest building in the world. You know, they're building another one to be bigger than that. So, you know, it's just the mentality. We're like, we've got the money. We will do what we can to be the best. Now, Rod is probably better equipped to tell us more about it, in the sense that what City have done for the local community in terms of schools and, you know, building facilities. Have they done loads for the local area, Rod?
Well, yeah, they do a scheme city with City in the community. Loads of coaches go to all schools across Manchester. And obviously, the facilities are, you know, first class. And, you know, they are doing things the right way. They are a fantastic team. And I disagree with you. I don't think they're the greatest team in Premier League history for me. I still think they still need to go on a couple of years and do something special, you know, because even if I was in that United team, now I'd be licking my lips thinking, you know, for next year, thinking, if, you know, if we've got a chance to be the best Premier League team in history, and if we do that, then we're the best Premier League team in history. So, but that's the job that Jose Mourinho's got. He's got to bring in that type of character. You want that in every game. But, you know, I just still think the 2008 United side, the 2002 Arsenal side, even the Chelsea side, would still give them a good run for the money.
It's a conundrum we'll never, ever find out about, but, you know, it's all about...
Yeah, exactly. It's a totally different game now as well. Yeah. So, like, 10, 15 years ago, you know, would this City side be able to deal with it on a physical battered season. You know, remember United kicking Arsenal to bits, and I'm sure Arsenal have done the same. Could you get away with that? No, you couldn't. So, you know, that's why City are such a good side, because you can't, it's one way of not being able to beat them. You can't kick them to death, because you can't do that anymore. So, so you know, it's just, Liverpool have set the template to beat them, but you've got to have attacking players and world-class players in that position to be able to do that.
Yeah, I can imagine a Thierry Henry in his prime against Vincent Kompany.
Yeah,
exactly. Just like look at the top three for City: Aguero, Sterling, and Sané. Are they better than Tevez, Rooney, Ronaldo? I just go through the team and I think, I don't know. It's difficult.
Players maybe not, but as a team and what they've done, I think they've been the best. I mean, you can always say
they won the league and Champions League, that team, Jan. City haven't done that. They've won the league. You got knocked out by Liverpool.
Yeah, but this is what we're discussing. Are they the best Premiership team that we've seen? And for me, it's yes. Premiership team, for me, it is, yeah. Because of everything that they've achieved this season. You know, they finished, 19 points ahead of United? That's like nearly...
Yeah, but you get a record for that. It gets broken. It's like the Arsenal team 2002. They've gone unbeatable. Yeah, it's a record, but really, you don't really get anything for it. You're not in the game to go, what I'm going to beat. I'm in there to win trophies. That's it. All I want to do is win trophies. I don't give a shit about records. All I want to do is win trophies, and that's what it's all about. Not getting 100 points, 100 goals, because that'll be broken. Records are there to be broken. You can't take away trophies.
Well, if it gets broken, then I'll probably say the next team that breaks here are the greatest team in the Premiership. But I don't know. For me, they are.
People said they won't be people. You know, Usain Bolt's record won't be. I'm sure it will be eventually, but your record will be broken. You can't take away that Champions League final, that Premier League that year. City failed to do that this year. If they do it next year or the year after, then yeah, by all means, they were the greatest team in Premier League history. But believe me, they've still got a couple of years and see what they can do.
Good point.
Put you in your place there, didn't he?
Yeah, it's a matter of opinion, isn't it?
Okay. Right, let's move on. The record books. The record books show that Arsene Wenger's last game as Arsenal boss was a 1-0 victory away at Huddersfield, then a rare away win at that. Meanwhile, Spurs won the Arsene Wenger Invitational, also known as fourth place, after beating Leicester 5-4. Now, any chance Chelsea had of sneaking into the top four was put to bed after Liverpool's 4-0 win over Brighton, although Antonio Conte's men didn't help themselves by putting in a pathetic performance at Newcastle, losing 3-0. Now, Rod, Harry Kane, he grabbed the brace, as did Eric Lamella, a player who has really struggled to make much of an impact, mate. Now, Pochettino still has faith in him, but do you think there's more to come?
Well, that depends on the lad, really, because, you know, obviously when he gets a spot in the team, he's got to perform. He's obviously got a little bit of ability, but, you know, he's consistent with Lamella. You know, you have to be consistent, and especially when Tottenham on that version. Did he go up or did he go down? So, you know, he's obviously looking for top players to take him to that next level. And Lamella's got something, but, you know, he needs to get consistent in his game. He's not been lucky with injuries, but, you know, when he has got a spot in the team, has he performed to his best capabilities? Has he put a stake to the manager saying, you know, I'm not to not leave me out? I don't know he has. So, you know, like I say, he's not that young anymore. He's getting older day by day. So he needs to put that consistency in his game. But like I say, he's got some talent.
Do you know what? Eric Lamella reminds me of... I'm going to say this and don't laugh, but I'm going to explain myself in just a moment. He reminds me of Anthony Martial in the sense that you got this massive social media loving for him. You know, you got Martial FC and you got all these Spurs fans that love Eric Lamella. He can't do anything wrong. But then you got people such as myself that are sitting there going, what's the big deal? I don't understand what the big deal is. James, what do you make of Eric Lamella? Because he's been hot and cold for Spurs. And to be fair, I don't think he's done anything to justify that fee that they spent on him.
I think he had a bit of a tough start to life in England, didn't he? And then he spent some time out with that long injury spell. I think towards the end of this season, I work with quite a lot of Tottenham fans, and a lot of them have been saying that, you know, they're beginning to see the potential and the talent that they actually paid for a couple of years ago. It's just whether he can actually take that into the season. His consistency is a big thing. you can take them into next season and really do that every game, like a lot of Tottenham players have been doing over the last couple of years, like Kane, like Ali, like Eriksen, then I think we'll be, this time next year, might be going, oh, do you know what, they've got, you know, it's worth every penny. But I think, I know he's been a little bit inconsistent, but at the same time, he has had a tough start to life in England, and I think injuries haven't helped, and I think that has really, like, you know, just, like, prevented him from perhaps living up to his potential a lot earlier.
You see, the thing is, Pochettino obviously loves him. You know, he's his countryman. I don't think that's a massive factor in his decision to constantly put him on the bench or whatever. But then when you see, you've got Dele Alli, Christian Eriksen, and Son. They're the three players that are going to be ahead of Lamella in the pecking order.
Probably Lucas Moura as well, isn't it?
Exactly. He brought in Lucas Moura in January. He brought in Sissoko as well in the summer. So he's another forward player around that right-hand side. So I'm thinking, what does the lad have to do to get a regular spot in the team? What is going on in his mind at the moment? Is he happy to settle for a place on the bench and then come on every now and again to put in a cameo appearance? I don't understand this. This is what I'm saying about players with ambition and players that are happy to just sit there and collect their wages and come on every now and again. Has he turned into one of those players? Because he was one of those Baldini signings, wasn't he?
Yeah, he was, yeah. I think it's just consistency with him, to be honest. He's got the talent. He's a really good player.
But when you say he's got the talent, you're measuring up against who? Because when you look at players like similar to his age...
No, he's got ability. He's good on the ball. He's tricky. He can cross. He's got really good left foot. He's got ability. He's there. He's just being consistent. It's like what you said with Martial. Martial's got ability, but his temperament, he's not a Man United player. So, you know, if you're not right in the head, you're not going to do it on the pitch. And, you know, Lamella needs to step up for Tottenham. That's why he's not starting every game. Because people like Son, who might not be... Listen, Son's a technically good player, but might not be as kind of gifted technically as Lamella, because he's got the temperament, because he works hard or he's consistent, he plays, and it's simple as that.
Okay, there's me told. Right, James, a very uncharacteristic defensive display by Chelsea, not very Antonio Conte-like, was it? Are you expecting them to put in a bit of a better performance at Wembley on Saturday?
Yeah, I'd be surprised if you saw a very similar performance as the Newcastle one. Chelsea have a good record at Wembley, don't they? They always tend to turn up at Wembley. And they're going to want, I mean, it looks like Conte's going to be leaving now. I think he and the players are going to want him in that rain on the high. Mourinho and Man United would obviously have different ideas. But, you know, I think when it's a one-off game in the cup final, I think, you know, Chelsea always seem to, as I said, they always seem to turn up and put in a good performance. You know, I've just got to look at my notes here, sorry. Conte's going to end up being another one of those managers at Chelsea that's, you know, left the club at being sacked, having won trophies. And I think a lot of what you saw at Newcastle was the players with one eye on that cup final, on that, you know, let's end the season on a high. I think they knew, I know they had a chance of getting in that top four, but they knew that Liverpool playing at home to Brighton, they knew that Liverpool were going to win that. They knew that top four was out the window. But let's have one eye on the cup final and end that season on a high. And I think that's what we'll see. I think Chelsea will win in the cup final. I think it won't be a straightforward victory, but I think they'll be lifting the cup.
You know what, now you say that, if Chelsea do win the FA Cup, Conte would have won two trophies in 2 years. Now, he hasn't spent a ton of money here, really, if you compare him to other managers. So, would you say that he's been a relative success at Chelsea?
I would say so, yeah. If you look at it on paper, although, you know, Mourinho left when he sort of finished, like they finished outside the top five, he finished 10th, didn't he? That season when he left. But most of them have won trophies, regardless of how much money they've spent. But they've all left. There's a real underlying problem at Chelsea. There hasn't been really any managers that have failed at Chelsea over the years. The way I see it, being a West Ham fan, trophies are everything. I haven't seen my club win a trophy in my entire lifetime, apart from the playoff final. So to see a club like Chelsea sacking managers for winning the FA Cup or for winning the Premier League, which is essentially what Abramovich is doing, you know, Conte is a massive success at Chelsea. I think the way they won the league last year was incredible. That's been beaten again this year by Man City, as we know. But you know, he's not been a fan. I think he's been superb. I think he deserves a lot of credit.
Yeah, the thing is, I've always found it fascinating with Chelsea because they've been one of those clubs they've been able to sack managers, bring in new guys, and they still manage to win leagues. Ancelotti, AVB came in and okay, didn't do too well there, but you know, Avram Grant got into Champions League final. Di Matteo won the Champions League. Benitez won the Europa League. So they've been chopping and changing managers. But the one thing I can say about that is that these league winning sides, these Champions League winning sides, they've had the same core players. You know, they've had the core there with Cech, Cole, Terry, Drogba, Lampard, those players. But now they don't have those core players. They don't have the players that are in the know kind of thing. Okay, Cahill's still there. Hazard, I don't think he's...
His heart's not in it.
Yeah, you could tell he's not ingrained in the Chelsea DNA. He's not that kind of player. So I think the next manager that comes in, I don't think Chelsea will win the league for a long time. I'm talking maybe 5 or 6 years until they get their house in order, because right now it just seems that, you know, they're willing to sack Conte because he didn't win them the league in the second season. Okay, they had a disastrous Champions League campaign, but I just don't understand what they're trying to do. They've got the whole Moneyball thing with these players going out on loan as well. So are they going to start using these players? I mean, their youth team is fantastic, you know? So I'm not entirely sure what is around the corner. I mean, we mentioned Sarri possibly taking over. Would he make them that much of a difference?
Chelsea have brought in a lot of players in that team, in that squad this season. Just because it hasn't worked out, you know, or the money has been big. How many has he brought in? 8, 9 players, if I'm not mistaken?
Zappacosta,
Emerson, Barkley. Barkley's been a disaster. How much did they spend for Barkley? 30, 40 mil? Morata hasn't been a success. What was he? 60, 70 mil? Morata?
Jude.
Drinkwater? Bakayoko? One of the worst signings in the Premiership? Rudiger?
Well, now you say that, I'll retract everything I said about spending big. So, crikey, I completely forgot about it.
They have spent money this season, Chelsea, and they've brought in a lot of players because they haven't been a success. You know, people are talking about how there weren't his players. Well, whose players were there? He was the one that inherited. He's the one that bought them. He bought Kante last season. They won the league with him, didn't he? So just because his signings this year haven't been great doesn't mean...
Did he buy David Luiz as well? Bring him back?
Brought him back, yeah. So for me, their season has been really poor. From you know, maybe the players need time to gel. You know, maybe he's bought too many in, but you know, bought Giroud as well, didn't he?
Yep.
So
wow. Now you think about it, crikey. See, I'm getting old, mate. I'm forgetting these things. Not as old as Rod, though. But yeah, had to get one in. Right, Jan. United prepared for the cup final with a 1-0 win against Watford. His testimonial pace, really.
Yep.
Rashford played up front on his own. He grabbed the winner. Were you happy with the performance?
No, not really, but it's nothing. I didn't expect anything different, to be fair. Having some great football season, and then if you ever, you know, wanted to see a meaningless game, it was that one on Sunday. Watford have been on holiday mode for the last, 2 months since they stayed up, you know, mathematically, and United's eye was on the cup final on Saturday. So, it was nothing game, really, nothing performance. Sad to see Michael Carrick leave because he's been such a great servant to United. And, I mean, he played 85 minutes and he was the best player on the pitch. And, you know, I was thinking, where have you been all season? You know, when we kind of knew they're playing that centre of the park. So, United have got to replace him, of course. But, yeah, all eyes on Saturday. Potentially, you might see one of the worst cup finals on Saturday, yeah, to be fair.
Probably not as bad as last time we played them in the final. But anyway,
yeah.
Right, you mentioned Michael Carrick. He's another player who probably should have earned more England caps. Also called it a day. The final member of United's 2008 Champions League winning side joins the club's coaching staff. Underrated by non-United fans. Do you think, James?
I think so. I think he's... So, right, you don't play over 450 games for Man United if you're not one of the best midfielders in the game, let alone in England. I think he's massively underrated. I think this season he's only played a few games, from what I can see. But you know, last year at 35, he played 38 games in all competitions at the age of 35. To be playing at that level consistently at the age of 35, I think is fantastic. Doesn't get enough credit. The fact he's only had 34 caps says a lot about how underrated he's been in this country. You know, I think hopefully, given Mourinho's comments after Sunday's game, I think, you know, he's got a bit of potential to go on and be quite a successful manager. You know, will he be the future Man United manager? I don't know, but you know, perhaps he'll go and prove to people that, okay, he was quite underrated to non-Man United fans, but he might become quite a well-rated manager to kind of put that right.
You know, that's a very good call because he does seem like a very level-headed guy. Yeah. He's tactically astute when it comes to being on the pitch, you know, player awareness. And he's got this fantastic range of passing. I mean, I remember when we signed him in 2006, £16 million. People were like, oh, £16 million. Mm. You look at him now, you know, that £16 million is a bargain when you look at the amount of money, even the amount of money United have spent on midfielders in the past, Anderson and whatever, you know what I'm talking about. So I think he's been a fantastic player. Rod, what do you make of Michael Carrick overall?
Yeah, like you said, he's just a fantastic passer, well, fantastic player. And like you say, you don't play nearly 500 games for Man United if you're not a top player. And, you know, you say non-United fans, but I remember, United fans slagging him off as well. You know, he's been underrated by a lot of people, and obviously when the Golden, the 92 lot retired and he stepped into Scholes' position, and people realised how much of a good player he was. You know, he played every week under Sir Alex. He could pass left and right. And, you know, there's probably one player in the Premier League, an English player that can pass the ball like him, and that's Jean-Joe Shelby. No one else in England side could pass the ball like him, or English players in the Premier League today. So yeah, he's just a fantastic player. Quiet lad. Went about his job, no problems, good family man, and you know, if he lived on the pitch, he'd probably like to score a lot more goals, but you know, that wasn't his game. That was his game was dictating the game, like almost like a quarterback, and like I say, he was a fantastic player and he'd be sorely missed.
Mm. You? Oh, very underrated. But he's always been underrated at West Ham when he first started, and then when he went to Tottenham and then United. I think it's probably his image, the fact that he's not on social media. He doesn't, you know, you don't hear about Michael Carrick. He's just a quiet lad. He's a bit like Scholes, isn't it? He does his job on the pitch and goes home to his family. And for a player who can play in a position at United for he did for so long, you know, people spoke about Michael Carrick that he can't tackle or you don't see him tackling. He didn't need to because his positioning was so good that he can intercept anything and he didn't need to tackle. You know, because he was all brain up and carrying. Of course, absolutely, you know. And he will be missed at United, 100%. But I'm glad he's got the coaching, Rob, because whatever he's learned over the years and his style, hopefully he can implement to the new core of United players that come through.
Let's not make any bones about it. United's academy has been... It's been at sixes and sevens for the past eight or nine years. You know, the players that have come through haven't been good enough. And I think that stems from, you know, not having someone replacing Brian McClair. Obviously, Nicky Butt's come in and he's doing what he can. McKenna's been doing well in the under-18s. But I think with Michael Carrick there, you've got a lot of youngsters that obviously look up to him. Like, you know, Angel Gomez and Chong and all these other players. So there's a lot of advantages of him being there. And obviously, you know, a player with so much experience, so many titles, so many trophies under his belt. If you can't learn from him, then you shouldn't be at a club. In fact, you should be playing football if you can't learn from him, as far as I'm concerned.
Yeah, 100%.
No. But anyway, right, let's move on. Let's move on to another player that is really making waves this season. And Mo Salah, he's been an absolute revelation. You know, he's unquestionably deserves a player of the year. He scored 32 league goals this season. He's got 44 in 51 games. Absolutely remarkable. Now, James, I awarded Liverpool the Champions League trophy after their first leg win over AS Roma a few weeks ago. This guy laughed. They got to the final. And I just base it on Salah's form. I based it on how Ronaldo kind of guided United to the Champions League in 2008. It's a similar form. It's a similar kind of momentum. Do you see any flaws in Mo Salah's game, though?
The only flaw I've seen this season, and it's kind of contradictory to what he's gone on to achieve, actually, is that he has seemed to miss a lot of chances. a lot of clear cut chances. But then he's made up with that with scoring, 44 goals in 51 games. Other than that, you know, he's slotted in really nicely in Klopp's style of play at Liverpool. He's the perfect type of player for what Klopp wants to achieve. The way that he, Mane and Firmino link up together in that counter-attack is you know, devastating. And because of that, you know, I just think if he could maybe put the ball in the back of the net a little bit more often when, you know, rather than miss those chances, which sounds ridiculous given how many he scored, then, you know, he could be even better than what he is now. The real big question now is that can he take this form, one, into the Champions League final, which I think he will do because he's a big game player, but also into next season. Is he going to be a one-season wonder? Or can he go on and do this for 2 or 3 years in the Premier League for Liverpool? If he can, then, you know, I can't imagine talking about any flaws in his game if he can continue like this.
The thing is, what reminds me of Ronaldo in Salah is that he's not constantly on social media. You know, fair enough, Ronaldo is always in the limelight, but he takes it in his stride. And that's the same with Salah. It seems that none of this phases him at all. He's so level-headed. You know, we've heard what he does in Egypt, you know, building hospitals and whatnot, which is actually fantastic, you know. And, you know, he just seems like this guy that, as I said, nothing seems to bother him. He just takes it in his stride, gets on with it, plays the game, and that's it. Go home, pray, do what he's got to do, and that's it.
Yeah.
It's incredible. I hate to admit this, but I actually like him. You know, as a United fan, I shouldn't be saying nice things about Liverpool, but I like him. He doesn't come across as an asshole. Do you get what I'm saying? You can tell that, you know, he's very, very humble, and, you know, that I've got a lot of respect for him. But anyway, let's move on because we've done enough Liverpool niceties this season. Right. Now, West Ham ended their season with a 3-1 home win against Everton. Lanzini and Arnautovic, who else, with the goals. Now, James, I'm going to ask this one to you, mate, before I ask the rest of the guys. Yesterday, reports claim that Marcus Silva was in line for the West Ham job. Now, apparently he's sit for the Everton job now, sorry, mate. So what does it actually mean for David Moyes and Big Sam? How do you think they've done at their respective clubs?
From a West Ham perspective, I think David Moyes has done exactly what he was asked of him. So has Sam Allardyce at Everton, really. Came in, the job was to stabilise the club, keep them in the Premier League. Both managers have done that. I just think being a West Ham fan, particularly with that stadium move, it's all about supposedly going on to that next level, aiming for, you know, a top eight finish, top six finish if possible. And then suddenly you sat there with David Moyes battling relegation. I think to a lot of fans that, you know, it was, you know, where's the ambition? And I think that's why David Moyes will be leaving the club this summer. And the club will be looking to make a change. And a similar thing with Everton, you know, they got bought out. Mashiri's bought them, promised big things, spent a lot of money last summer, didn't work out. And then suddenly they've got Sam Allardyce playing the football that he plays, which isn't, you know, the greatest to watch. I know that from experience. And, you know, then they've had, you know, and I think they finished eighth in the end, didn't they? So on paper, that looks a good season. But, you know, if you speak to any Everton fan, you know, they've been bored, you know, like, bored to tears sometimes with the way that Allardyce sets his teams up and wins football matches. Both managers did their job. They did what was asked of them. But I think where the clubs that they were at both want more. You know, they want to be a little bit more ambitious. And I think when that comes into play, Moyes and Allardyce aren't those guys. They're the type of guys that go into a relegation-threatened club now and save them and then move on. We've seen that with Allardyce a lot over the years. And I think Moyes will probably become that same guy.
Yeah, we've spoken about managers that come in to keep teams up, like, you know, your Tony Pulis and et cetera, and Big Sam and Moyes are two that we've spoken about at great length. Unfortunately, David Moyes didn't get the chance to do that at Sunderland because, well, he actually did get the chance, but he messed it up. But, you know, will there come a point where these two managers get found out? Because there's only so many times you can get away with playing a 4-5-1 or a 4-2-3-1 and just sit back and soak up pressure and then rely on two or three players. Because let's not make any bones about it. Arnautovic has been West Ham's go-to guy this season. Cenk Tosun has come in and he's been absolutely fantastic for Everton. Do you think without these two players, either club would have been fighting relegation on the, till like the final day, James?
I think so. I mean, Arnautovic, 11 goals after Christmas when Moyes came in. Without those 11 goals, we would have been relegated. We would have gone down, definitely. I think, you know, these managers have come in and they've said to these players, you know, we rely on you, you're my go-to guy, you know, you're going to be the focal point, everything's up to you. And I think where Arnautovic is concerned, he needed that arm around him to go, right, you've got to be our hero, you're our best player, go and do it for us. You know, and I think Tosin's probably the same. I don't know how many goals Tosin scored for Everton. He scored quite a few towards the end, didn't he? Again, I think they're the sort of players where they need to be told that they're the best, and then they can go and do it. And luckily, they had Dyson Moyes there that knew how to manage those type of players. But without Arnautovic, Lanzini, and anyone like that, West Ham would have gone down. But it just proved that we've got the players there to do it.
Thing is, with Moyes, you've got to give him credit with Arnautovic because he put him up front, didn't he? You know, Arnautovic has always been like a left-sided winger or right. But at West Ham, Moyes actually decided to play him up front. That's where Arnautovic's goals have come from, because he's been a threat ever since he's played up front. And
because he's been ineffective out wide. That's basically it. He's moved him more central because A, he probably doesn't trust Andy Carroll. B, he probably doesn't trust Hernandez to play 90 minutes.
But he's still brave to play a winger kind of up front. So you've got to give him credit for at least...
But he's been known to score goals anyway. So is it really a stroke of genius?
It's not a stroke of genius. It's just it was a good move to play him up front, considering that he's a wide player. Because that's where he started his career, wherever he's played.
Let me tell you something. Sorry to interrupt. Let me tell you something. West Ham should not be fighting relegation. West Ham, like Everton, should be challenging for European spots. These are big clubs. I don't care whether West Ham have moved into a new stadium. I don't care if the board are shit.
Yeah, but in what?
They have the players there. Well, tell me. Ask me the question. Ask me.
No one's got a right to fight for any position. That, you know, it's like I'm United saying, right. saying they United, should we should win the league
no,
every
no,
year.
No, you're twisting my words. I said they should be. I'm not saying they have the divine right to be.
Said they shouldn't be fighting for relegation.
They shouldn't be.
Well, why not?
What do you mean, why not?
Recent history, they've always kind of battled
relegation. These are clubs steeped in history with fantastic academy players that have come through over the years. They're embedded in British football history.
But that's going back to the argument, sorry to interrupt you now, that when we've spoken about United, when you said, well, you shouldn't judge it from the past now. It's the same thing with West Ham. If you want to judge West Ham through their recent years, they've either gone down, come back up, been a little bit mid-table,
or been relegated.
I said West Ham, not Everton.
Right,
Everton should have a little bit more ambition because, like you said, they've never been relegated. They've never been in that position. Well, they did with Farrelly all them years ago, but that's another story. But with West Ham, in the recent kind of, 10, 15 years, they've always been in that position. It's just now with the stadium, they should have a little bit more.
They got relegated with the highest points total of a relegated side. So
they still went down. That's irrelevant.
I think where West Ham are concerned, no, that stadium move was supposed to be the start of a new era and a new West Ham United, as it were, one that is challenging or should be challenging for those. And that last year at Upton Park, we finished 4 points off the top four that year. I know we finished seventh. We got pipped to the top six by Southampton on the last day. But that really set the benchmark for a lot of West Ham fans. They're like, look, hang on, look how good we are. Look how good we can be. And then it's 2 years later, we're back in relegation with David Moyes in charge. And I think that's where you would have read a lot in the papers about a lot of fan unrest, and you know, because look how far we've fallen in such a short space of time. I know a lot of people go, that was just a one-off season, but when you're given a season like that for a club like us, which you're right, we are very used to battling relegation or being mid-table, to then be given a season like that, I know we were carried by Dimitri Payet a lot, but then be where we are now, you can kind of forgive West Ham fans for going, you know, we want more than this, we want more than David Moyes. We want more than, you know, long ball football or negative football. We want to go for your Marco Silvers, your Fonsecas, and see where we can go, because we've got the stadium. You know, we've got the income to do it now. So I don't see why we can't start thinking about pushing on.
Oh, I agree. And look, let's be 100% honest. We've spoken about this numerous occasions. The Premier League money, the TV money, goes to these clubs. I mean, the team that gets relegated stands to earn, I say earn, about 100 million quid. So already, you know, when you drop into the Championship, you're about 90 million pound richer than everyone else. You know, it's crazy. So yeah, I agree. You know, so, you know, when you were points from the Champions League spot, you went into Europa League. Bilic didn't take it serious, did he?
Well, I mean, not really. I mean, it didn't help that we were starting in like the third or the first qualifying round. So we ended up having last season starting like 3rd of July that year, I think, or something like that. So, I mean, we were starting a lot earlier than everyone else. So we knew that we had a longer season to deal with. But, I mean, he did take it relatively seriously. It was a few youth players, that young, like 17-year-olds that got a chance. But, you know, like Czech Kouate, Manuel Lanzini, you know, a lot of first team players were involved in those qualifiers. We just weren't good enough.
I remember Everton gave it a go, didn't they? And they fell short. I think the Elusive, which club was it? It was a Ukrainian club, I think. I forget, because Martinez really went for it.
Zoria? Was it Zoria?
I can't remember. But they really, it really hurt their league campaign. But Rod, you know, this Portuguese fella, Marco Silva, that's linked with West Ham and Everton. We saw him go to Hull. He almost kept them up. Loads of people gave him so much credit, saying, oh, he turned them around. They put up a good fight. He went to Watford, started the season really well, and then his head was turned by Everton, ironically, and then the season went to shit for Watford. Now, if he goes to either Everton or West Ham, can he be trusted? Because let's be 100% honest, and I'm going to go into this story later on. There's a team in Portugal that's having a few issues at the moment. What if a team back home turn around and say, come on, Marco, do you want to come back home? What happens then? Can this guy be trusted to take over another club, especially a club like West Ham or Everton? Or Everton.
I think the Everton job would be the better job for him. But yeah, I think you can trust him. He's obviously a good coach, good manager. And he just needs a good stint there. The Watford job, he was doing so well. And obviously, you know, when there's speculation like that, it could go either way. And obviously, went the way that it wasn't the best for Watford. And obviously, we got rid of him. So but I think he is a good coach. He did a good job at Hull. Basically, we're down, and it was like a bit of a job Darren Moore did. You know, you give them hope, and obviously they got relegated. But you know, when he did well at Watford as well, and obviously until that, like I said, that happened. And I think Everton would be the best job for him because West Ham is just absolute turmoil. Them owners just. Them owners need to go because, you know, when you look at the stats and the money that they haven't spent, it's just, or the money they have spent, it's just laughable for a Premier League side. And for so, but the reason they supposedly moved to that ground is to have more funds for the playing staff, and they haven't got that. It was a massive mistake because, you know, Upton Park, it was a difficult place to go there. They had a great atmosphere. And, you know, that Olympic Stadium, it's just another ground for them. Mm. You know, Upton Park was one of them places that he probably didn't want to go and play at because, you know, once the crowd got behind him, it was a good place to play football and a good place for West Ham. But, yeah, I think Marco Silva, the best place for him would be for Everton because, like I say, West Ham, unless they spend some money, it's just going to be groundhog day for them next year.
Yeah, I agree, mate. I agree. Right, in other news, Barcelona suffered a shock defeat at Levante, meaning their quest to go the whole season unbeaten is over. Now, mate, you said Barcelona wouldn't go a whole season unbeaten. And you actually even predicted a loss against an unfancy team. So here you go. You look at Levante's form. Let's be 100% honest, mate. I mean, it shouldn't really be much of a surprise that they got the win. I mean, if you look at Paco Lopez, he took over in March. The club has won 8 of its last 10 games.
Yep.
They've gone from 1 point above the relegation zone to 17 points clear. I mean, this is a remarkable turnaround. Any other season in La Liga, he'd be manager of the year, wouldn't he?
You just took the words out of my mouth. He should, shouldn't he? For what he's done at Little Levante. Isn't it? Did you watch it on?
I caught the last half an hour, and it was
extraordinary game of football. It was absolutely brilliant. But listen, you've got to give Levante absolute credit. I mean, I don't know with Barcelona if it was a case of complacency, thinking because they drew with Madrid the week before that that was it, they're going to go unbeaten. Of course, there was no Messi as well, but I don't know.
They were 5-1 down.
Yeah, Barcelona didn't look at the race. Yeah, like they were... They looked uninterested, didn't they, Barcelona, to be fair? And Yerry Mina didn't have the greatest games at the back, did he? He looked absolutely appalling.
He's another La Masia prod, isn't he?
They bought him from Ecuador, didn't
they? Then he spent time in the La Masia.
Well, most of them do, don't they? They come out the youth ranks there. But I did say they won't go unbeaten. And I mean, at 5-1, I was kind of, proud of myself. I sent a tweet, and then at 5-4, I was like, I've got to delete this tweet. I'm going to end up looking like an absolute idiot. So, in a way, I was like, thank God they lost.
Yeah, well, there's always next season, I guess. Right, Juve's draw at Roma secured their 7th Serie A triumph in a row. But the big news coming out from Italy is the appointment of Roberto Mancini as national team boss. You think he's going to have a big blue scarf as well in a 40-degree heat? Now, James, the Azzurri are going through somewhat of a transitional period, mate. So how do you think Mancini will do, given A, he hasn't got a bottomless pit of cash to spend like he did at City, and to some extent Zenith, I guess, and B, there won't be many referees who'll give him a hand like he did at, when he was at Juve?
It's a difficult one because there's a huge difference between club management and international management, isn't there? You get a manager who'll win trophies for fun at club level. Mancini's done that for a number of clubs, but then going to international level when it's more of a relaxed job, isn't it? I mean, you're not training every day. I think it's more coaching, isn't it, than anything else. So as I said to you earlier, I don't know a great deal about Italian football and the Italian national team. It's not my expertise, but I think, it's definitely a rebuilding job there, isn't it? But for Mancini in Italy.
Do you know what's actually quite funny about this question? I remember as I was typing out today, I was actually talking to a work colleague of mine, and we'll talk about Allegri possibly going to Arsenal. And I said, there won't be many referees who'll give him a hand like they did when he was Juve boss. And I actually wrote this in the question. And now I'm reading it back. I'm like, Mancini never managed Juventus.
That's why I looked at you like that. And I was like,
I'll leave it in there.
This happens.
You probably meant Inter, right?
No, because I was talking to my mate at work and I actually said this word for word. And I'm typing it as I'm talking. This is the problem I've actually doing a show script while you're at work. Yeah. Anyway, I can't type anything else up in data protection. Right. I'll tell you what, let's turn our attention to another football mad nation, Portugal, where today, I didn't put this in the questions to you guys because you might be completely oblivious to what's happened, but today, 50 masked Sporting Lisbon fans, if you can call them that, stormed the club's training ground, attacking players and staff, leaving top goal scorer Bas Dost with a cut on his head. Do you know about this?
I've heard of it. Yeah.
Yeah? Okay. Well,
surprised with Dost, he's been their best player.
Exactly. Now, Sporting missed out on the Champions League by 3 points. And I think they play Aves, yeah, that's right. Yeah. In the cup final this weekend. So, and as, to be honest, it hasn't really been the best of returns for Jorge Jesus, who was an absolute legend at the club. And he's come back as a manager from Benfica, and he hasn't replicated.
He's done nothing.
Exactly. Spent quite a bit of money as well. Mm-hmm. But you got to spare a thought for Bas Dost. I mean, this is the guy. He's the club's leading goal scorer. He scored 24 this season. I think he got 31 last season or something like that. In total, he's got 61 goals in 61 games for Sporting, yet he's the one that took a beating. Well, what do you make of it? Because we've been talking about things happening in Greece and in Cyprus with, fans storming the pitch during training, but attacking players and staff, and it's bonkers. I mean, there's even a rumor that it was the chairman that set the fans onto these players. I mean, it's just bonkers.
Before a cup final as well. I don't know what state they're going to be going onto that pitch. They're a big club, Sporting, of course, in Portugal, and they've underachieved a lot in the last two, three years. So it is bizarre. I'm laughing at it because it's you hear it in Greece and Cyprus. I don't know if they do it in Portugal now as well. Yeah. I think he'll probably go at the end of the season, the manager. I think after 2 years and not achieving what potentially, you know, he got the job to do. I don't think it will last, and especially with the unrest that's going on now as well. When
do you know what? Benfica have been poor. But if you saw them in the Champions League this season, they've been atrocious.
Yeah. And they're the ones that challenged Porto for the title. Yeah.
And Porto aren't even all that. No, they're not. Obviously smashed them. Yeah. So what's it say about the state of the... Rod, when you hear about stories like this, mate, what do you think? Because fans shouldn't be allowed to be storming the training ground. Well, where's the security? Where's anyone protecting these players? I know, you know, you can't... It's a rare thing that happens, but 50 people? I mean, this is bonkers, mate.
Yeah, it's a strange one. It goes on over there. Though, but, you know, just, like I say, there doesn't seem to be any security or police presence. It just continues to happen. It's crazy. I don't know how it continues to keep happening, but you know, it just seems to keep happening year after year. Unless the police or the authorities or they get some security in place, it'll just continue to happen.
James, this wouldn't happen out here, would it? I mean, I know Gold and Sullivan were apparently heckled a few months ago by West Ham fans. Some say that they were spoken to nicely and it came across as quite negative. When you hear stuff like this, mate, it makes you think, like, you know, it's just a game, surely.
Yeah, I mean, like, if you're going to start behaving like that, then, you know, you shouldn't be on the streets the way I see it, you know. As you said, it is just a game. I was at the West Ham Burnley game when there were fans trying to storm the director's box at London Stadium a couple of months ago. And you're looking at it going, yeah, I know we're in a bad place at the moment, but you can't start behaving like that. And I think it goes for anyone from any corner of the world, whoever supports any club from any country. You know, it is only a game and you've got to take a step back sometimes and think there's more important things than, you know, your team missing the top four by 3 points. That's not, in my mind, that's not a bad season. So, I don't know. I think it's a little bit far-fetched. And, you know, I can't see many of those players wanting to play for the club for much longer. If, you know, just a fear of failure now, isn't it? You know, how are they going to think? If they go out in that cup final and they lose, you know, what do they think is going to happen? Are they going to get attacked again?
They're moving to Spain.
If I was a sporting player, I'd be like, right, there's my transfer. Come off.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I mean, it's a strange one. Very weird.
I mean, there's a way to protest, isn't there? But that's not the way to do it. I mean, to indulge fear into the players and everyone around the club, that's not the way to go about it. Maybe don't turn up at a game, you know, vent your frustrations, you know, in some kind of way, but to attack the player. I mean, what did they achieve?
You know, listen, I completely agree with you. But see, this is the thing. The players have to share the blame a little bit. But me, from the outside looking in and looking at the way that Sporting Lisbon is run, I have to blame the owners. Because these are the guys that are saying, you know, they've got an Angolan owner who's a billionaire. And he's saying, you know, I'll spend money, I'll bring in this player, I'll bring in that player. And we've seen a lot of players come in to Sporting Lisbon. I mean, you had Joel Campbell there on loan for a while. The fella, the Costa Rican fella that's at Fulham.
David Ruiz.
Ruiz, exactly. Ruiz. So
Brian Ruiz, sorry.
Yeah, so they've brought in quite a few players. Jorge Jesus, obviously, he came in, massive controversy.
But the Portuguese league is not the players that you're going to attract to go. They've got to get, like, maybe kind of second-rate players.
I agree. Oh, is it Quintero, isn't he out there now?
Quintero's there.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So they haven't been tight with their money. But when the owner is making promises and then he goes out to slate the manager and fans in public and the players, it's going to cause something, isn't it? And, you know, out here we're lucky in the sense that, okay, we've got the odd nutcase, but it hasn't really come to that, has it? There's a pitch invasion at the end of the game. You rarely hear of players getting in any trouble.
Mm.
On the continent, though, they do not take any shit, you know, and that's the thing.
They storm onto the pitch and beat him up on the pitch.
Yeah.
They'll do that.
Yeah.
Go to like somewhere like Serbia, like Partizan Belgrade or Poland. Poland.
Yeah.
Turkey.
Blimey. Yeah. Less said about that, the better. But yeah, it's bonkers. And this news I just broke today, so. Anyway, right, we end our story, or I end our show with quite a bizarre one, really. The Republic of Ireland's under-17s crashed out of the European Championships in controversial manner. Now, goalkeeper Jimmy Cochran was given a second yellow card and sent off when the referee deemed it advanced from his line before the ball was struck in the penalty shootout. Now, as per the new laws introduced last year, a goalkeeper can only be replaced by a player that's finished the game. So central defender Mr. McEntry, I don't even know how to pronounce his first name, so I'm not going to try it, went between the sticks but couldn't prevent Daishwan Redan's penalty from going in. I know rules are rules, and I know the Dutch goalkeeper did something similar earlier on in the shootout. James, can you understand Martin O'Neill's rage afterwards, because he went running after that referee with an iPad?
Yeah, I mean, all goalkeepers jump off the line before a penalty is taken. I mean, I can't remember the last time I saw a penalty where a keeper didn't come off his line. And I think, particularly at that age group, you know, under-17s, I think it's... I know they always say, you know, school of hard knocks and all that, but I think it's very, very harsh and, you know, a bit jobs-worthy, really, isn't it? Just to go, oh, no, I'm gonna send you off in, you know, in a game like that. And, you know, they're essentially still kids. They're still, you know, I'm not saying they're still learning the game and they're learning the rules, but, you know, these players, it's going to knock that player's confidence, isn't it? Quite a lot. And I think, you know, referees got a bit of responsibility to just to think about the moment for a little bit and go, hang on, I'll penalise him. I'm not going to send him off. That's, you know, it's a little bit too far-fetched. But we see it all the time, don't we? You know, referees making rash decisions in big moments. And I think this, although this isn't a massive, massive game, at that age group it is. So, you know, he still has that responsibility, and I think he completely overstepped the mark.
I can't actually ever remember a goalkeeper being booked for that.
Are you reading my mind tonight? I was just about to say that to you. When was it a rule or a law that the keeper gets booked if he steps out to... I don't remember it. I just thought he got replayed and took the penalty again.
Yeah. It's bizarre.
This is the issue with referees we've got, though, isn't it? In my 40 odd years of existence, I've never, ever seen that before.
Yeah.
Ever.
Correct.
And so where's the consistency? Why, where's the template for him to send a young kid, like James, so that can, you know, if he's not a strong character, he can damage his career. And it's just a bit of common sense, referees. Come on, it's just a ridiculous decision, and it's just that referee should be, you know, put on leave or put on a course, or just, I don't know, something needs to be happening, because that was just a ridiculous decision for a young kid. All right, for a man, it'd still be a ridiculous decision, but for a 17-year-old lad, after making a fantastic save, book him and to send him off, it's just like I say, it's just ridiculous. The referee, it's just no consistency. This is the problem we have with the referees. I've never ever seen that before, and then he sends him off in a massive competition for the lad. It's just shocking.
The thing is, when you watch it again, the referee like waits about 10-15 seconds before making his decision.
Not even though back is a yard or two. If we're talking inches here when the ball's struck, it's just a ridiculous decision, and hopefully that kid's got good people around him and he can get through, because it could damage a lad's career, that, like, if he's not mentally strong enough to deal with something like that.
He was distraught. He was on the idea. Yeah. He was gone, wasn't he? I felt sorry for him.
If anyone would be distraught, but it's the aftermath. Having people supporting him, and you're going to get him through it. We just have to wait and see. But it's, like I say, the referee, it was just a common sense referee. Come on.
I mean, if there's any referees or people kind of know the referees law, I like to for them to kind of come out and say if there is a rule or a law that you get booked for that, because like you said, I've never seen it. I don't know if it's like a new rule that's come out maybe that we don't know about, but I'm trying to recall a penalty over here that if a keeper...
The only time I'd say they'd have done that is that if the goalkeeper was time wasted, because you see a goalkeeper trying to you know, put the strike off, but even then, like, he wasn't doing that. Okay, he moved before the ball was struck. But as I said before, the Dutch goalkeeper did pretty much exactly the same thing, and
nothing happened.
So, okay, you're going to get your conspiracy theories. You're going to get people saying, oh, you know, the referee's paid off, whatever. But I just think that, you know, as you said, Rod, common sense has to prevail, man. I mean, you know, these things are going to happen. A goalkeeper is going to do that. Every goalkeeper does that. It's gamesmanship, you know, but there's nothing in the rules or the laws of the game that says a goalkeeper is going to get booked for encroaching his line. And the thing is, as I said, it's not as if he took a yard forward or 2 yards forward. It was left, or it was to his right, wasn't it?
Keep it right.
Madness, absolute madness. But that's football, isn't it? You're going to get stories like this every week, and I'm sure next week we're going to get another one.
You are, but you know, 17-year-old lad like that, James, and you have to use common sense. You can't. Oh, it's just a ridiculous decision. Just like I say, I was shocked when I seen it, because brand new. I don't allow anything shocked me for a while, but this was just felt so sorry for the lad, because he made a fantastic save. Then he gets sent off and he's distraught, and you know, ultimately his team go out of the cup. And if that's given, then they're still in it, and you never know what could happen then. So yeah, it's just a shocking decision. And like I say, this is the problem we have with referees. There's just no consistency.
Can you imagine if VAR was actually being used in that game and they actually found out that the goalkeeper had done that through VAR? This guy here, his head would have exploded, honestly. He absolutely can't stand VAR.
I'm surprised you're taking this one to mention it, to be honest.
I'm not finding no party. Right, that's it for us this week, boys and girls. I'd like to thank James for appearing on the show. James, thanks again, mate. Would you like to give our listeners your Twitter handle and how we can find out more about Football Fancast?
Yeah, you can get me on Twitter at @byjamesjones. It's @byjamesjones. And of course, head over to Football Fancast, @footballfancast, and check out our content at footballfancast.com.
Fantastic. And we hope to have you back on the show again, mate. It's been an absolute pleasure having you on.
Thanks for having me.
Great stuff. Mate, what's your Twitter handle?
Yannickus J.
And you're more active these days, which is fantastic.
No, thank you very much.
Brilliant. Rod?
It's at Rod James Giggs.
And our YouTube message, my friend?
Push the like button and subscribe.
Thank you very much. That's it, guys. Until next time, take care.